Welcome to WMKV Health Scope, a weekly discussion of health and wellness issues for older adults, their families, and caregivers. This call-in program is presented by 89.3 WMKV. To have your medical-related question concerning today's topic answered live on the air, call 513-772-9658. That's 772-WMKV. And now, WMKV Health Scope.
We thank you for joining us for Health Scope here on WMKV and now also on WLHS. Joining us back here, a very special guest who was here with us a while back, about a year ago, Dr. Amy Argus, Director of the Westchester Hospital Breast Imaging and also Interim Section Chief of Breast Imaging at the University of Cincinnati. Dr. Argus, thank you for being back in with us.
Thanks for having me.
We are going to kind of get everybody into the stream of consciousness about this a little bit early here, because this is something we really need to be aware of year round. And you already may have an inkling, whether you checked our Facebook site or whether you just heard me talk about breast imaging, that October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We need to be vigilant year-round. That's why we're here today talking about this. And thanks to Deb Teitelbaum at UC Health as well. And we'll give out some information about how you can find out more about screenings and more about just good breast health and what you should know about breast cancer and what your family should know and how to get this word out to the younger people in your life about the importance of checking. But I guess, first of all, Dr. Argus, we hear about the Susan B. Komen and other organizations that are doing fantastic work with this. I think a lot of people may have an idea that the incidence of breast cancer is maybe going down. Do we need to keep worrying about this? Why do we need to keep worrying about this, if so?
Well, you are correct that the incidence of breast cancer, you know, how many breast cancers occur, they have gone down since about 2000, but only by about 6%. Mm-hmm. And we believe that that's attributed to the fact that women stopped taking hormone replacement therapy after studies came out in the early 2000s from the Women's Health Initiative trial that showed that there was actually a risk of increases in breast cancer related to hormone replacement therapy. So we think that's why it's gone down a little bit, because that practice has changed. But it's still, breast cancer is still very common. There are still 250,000 new cases of invasive breast cancers diagnosed each year in the United States, and about 40,000 women still die each year. So it's common, and it's significant, and we still worry about it.
and we should be vigilant about this. And I want to get to what breast cancer is and how it's caused, what brings on breast cancer, at least what we understand so far. But the real bottom line of this is that there's still a lot we need to know as far as breast cancer. And I think these organizations do a fantastic job, but I think sometimes we kind of have a false sense of security. Well, this is all kind of underway. It's all in check, right? But there's a lot of research and a lot more that we need to understand. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And the organizations that raise money towards research, it's wonderful to have them working on breast cancer, and that money's used to help survivors, help not only research to find a cure, but also help patients and their families in other ways. And it's very beneficial. Research to prevent breast cancer is actually ongoing as well, but we've not been able to figure that one out just yet.
And of all the things that we hear about cancer, whether it's men and prostate cancer, predominantly women with breast cancer, but we're going to learn some astonishing numbers here later in this program that you were telling me right before the show. The whole idea is to catch this early, no matter what kind of cancer it is. How beneficial is it to try to capture or to find out that there's a problem before it becomes a bigger problem?
Yes. In general, with breast cancer, it is better to find it as early as possible. Mm-hmm. Cancers in the breast tend to spread elsewhere in the body. They usually go to the lymph nodes first under the arm, and then once they get there, the cancer cells can spread or metastasize. So the smaller the tumor, the less likely it is to have spread. That's why we focus so much on screening and trying to identify cancers small and early before they can spread elsewhere, while we can still treat and cure them.
And that's a great note, because we do have lymph nodes throughout our body. Mm-hmm. But I guess, is it because of the proximity of the breast to that armpit lymph node area that we have?
Yes. The lymph nodes are like, yeah, they're all over the body. They're like little filters. And so there are different stations of lymph nodes all over the body. So if you think about when you get a sore throat, you get an infection in your throat, the lymph nodes in your neck swell because that's where the throat drains. Basically, the little lymph vessels drain that tissue and filter out the germs. So in the breast, predictably, the breast is drained to the underarm, the lymph nodes in the underarm. Then there are also a few along the side of the sternum as well. They're called internal mammary lymph nodes. But most of the time they go to the underarm. So if tumor cells get out into the lymphatic system, they're drained in those lymph nodes. So typically if cancer cells have not gotten to the lymph nodes yet, they really can't get elsewhere in the body.
Right. And that's kind of like the depot, if you will, where they kind of then travel, I guess, through the bloodstream. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the idea is to catch us early before that tumor would get big enough that it starts casting off other cells and things like that, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Very good. Our special guest is Dr. Amy Argus. We're talking today about Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We're giving the information to you early here in September as we're recording this particular program and presenting it live on the air. And I do invite your calls here on this Monday afternoon, that if you would like to join us at 513-772-9658 or 877-772-9658. We'll be happy to take your calls concerning breast imaging, about breast cancer awareness, about any of this good, healthy habits to have as well. So let's talk for just a moment about exactly what breast cancer is and what causes it. Do we have some ideas, at least, of what might cause breast cancer?
Well, we don't really know what causes cancers to happen for sure. We do know that some people are more prone to get breast cancers than others, and we do know that there are some gene mutations. Our bodies, we're made up of genes or genetic material, and we do know that there are some mutations in certain genes that some people carry that make them more prone to get cancers, and there are some that cause breast cancer. Usually those genes are things that they alter what we call, just blanked on it, they don't allow cells to die, basically, so they don't tumor suppress, they're called tumor suppression genes. Mm-hmm. So they're lacking that, whereas the body normally will kill off abnormal cells, such as cancer cells. And so if that mechanism fails, then cells, cancer cells, will just, they grow continually without dying off like normal cells would.
There's a typical life cycle for most cells is what you're saying, and then these cells just don't turn off or don't die. They continue to grow and replicate, is it?
Yeah, that's basically the mechanism for all cancers. Cancer cells are cells that don't regulate. It's called apoptosis. It's when a cell dies. And so our cells in our body, our normal cells, are turning over all the time. New cells are forming and the cells are dying off. But in cancer cells, that regulation is gone and they just continue to grow and grow and grow without stopping and thus take over our normal cells.
And hence one of the things I guess the research is trying to find out is how do we get these cells to quit doing this? In effect, we want them to act as all the other cells in our body. And I imagine that's what gives us things like tumors, lumps, things like that, that we can feel, which in some cases may save your life if you can sense one of these.
Yes, they grow and grow and then start with a few cells that then continue to grow and grow and to form a mass that we can eventually feel.
Now, you mentioned that there may be some people who are a little bit more predisposed toward this. Are there family histories in this type of cancer, in breast cancer?
Yes, we do know that there are some cancers that seem to grow in families. So there are families who are more prone to cancers than other women. Some are probably related to genetic alterations, and we know, but we only know of a few. You know, we've only been able to find a few of the genetic alterations or mutations. And so there are still breast cancers that seem to run in families, and we haven't been able to maybe pinpoint exactly what is causing the cancers in those families.
And again, though, but if you do have a family history, probably all the more reason to be more aware of this even earlier than most women, would
yes,
that be?
Yes, that's true. If there's cancer running in the family, we do often recommend more aggressive screening. So for average risk women, we recommend beginning screening at age 40. But if there's a cancer that runs in the family, a woman may start screening earlier. The recommendation is to begin screening 10 years earlier than a first-degree relative was diagnosed with cancer.
Oh, okay.
So for a woman, if her mother was diagnosed with cancer at age 40, then she would begin her screening at age 30. That being said, we don't begin earlier than age 30 unless there's a known genetic, one of these genetic mutations that the woman may be carrying. Then we may start as early as 25.
What can we determine here? I mean, I know that there were, and we'll get to the whole idea of the self-test that women and even, I presume, men can do this. And we'll talk about the whole idea of male breast cancer as well coming up here, because something that I just threw off as kind of a, oh, no, by the way, kind of thing. You hit me with a number that almost knocked me out of my chair. So we'll talk about that as well. But the whole idea here of feeling for something like that, can we really, when something is that small, can we really generally feel that? Or is that still an important pretest that people should have?
Yes, that's a good question. So in general, for a mass to be felt in the breast on a self-exam or a doctor's exam, they're usually more on the order of about 2 centimeters in size or about an inch.
Okay.
Where our screening tests with our mammograms, we can find them in maybe around a centimeter. So we can find them much smaller before they can be felt. And so that's why we use imaging to screen for the cancers. But an important thing to, you know, for women to know is that screening imaging, say mammograms don't find all cancers. So it's pretty good. We find about 80% of cancers, but there are still cancers that might be felt but not seen on the mammogram. So the recommendation for annual screening for women is not only the annual mammogram, but also a clinical breast exam, meaning an exam by their physician every year over the age of 40, a breast exam. And then self-exams are important. However, the thinking has changed a little bit in the recommendations on self-breast exams. For women over 40, it is still good if they are comfortable doing a self-breast exam. We would recommend that the exam be done like following their period for women who are premenopausal when their breasts are not tender and swollen feeling about the same time every month. And they can be trained by their physician, maybe even do it the first time with their physician if they want to do a thorough exam, step-by-step kind of exam, covering both of their breasts and their underarms. But some women aren't comfortable with that. We found that it seemed that women were afraid of doing the exam, or they thought, well, I'm not going to do it because I'm not doing it right, and it became anxiety-provoking for women. And so there's also just the option of self-awareness, of just awareness of your breast and noticing a change, maybe, you know, just checking yourself in the shower now and then, or just, you know, being aware of a change in your body as you would if anything else in your body changed. And if anything is ever detected by a woman, she should, you know, see her doctor to have it further evaluated.
And by all means, and I'm sure, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it would seem to me that self-exam, if you say, well, I don't feel anything, that doesn't obviate the need to have more perfect testing, if you will, or more detection once you're beyond a certain age. Just because you don't feel something doesn't mean that there may not be something there.
Right.
So don't take a nice negative when you're feeling or checking your breast to be that, hey, I'm fine. I don't need to go have a mammogram, or I don't need to have this done, correct?
Right, because we want to find it before you can feel it.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the point. Now, we talked a little bit about kind of the whole nature versus nurture here. We talked about genetic predispositions. But what about diet and exercise? Are they factors at all in minimizing the risk of breast cancer?
Well, yes. Yeah, we do believe that a healthy diet, maintaining a healthy weight, and routine exercise are factors in preventing probably all sorts of cancers, including breast cancer. Specific diet or specific foods are being researched, but there's really no firm, say on that. But maintaining a normal weight is important, as well as active exercise. So the American Cancer Society actually recommends at least 150 minutes of moderate exercise per week for women to help decrease their risk. And then as we age and when we become postmenopausal, we have less estrogen in our body. So women who are premenopausal, most of their estrogen comes from their ovaries, but actually estrogen comes from our fatty tissues as well. And so we believe that, being overweight and having more fatty tissue in your older years may increase your risk for breast cancer because of the increased estrogens in the body.
Very interesting. And I was thinking even something maybe even more simplistic, and maybe wrong, but the fact that if you are heavier, it may be if you're doing a self-exam, it may be harder to feel something if there's more fat around the area or something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. That's my brilliant grasp of the non-medical. Mm-hmm. So we have with us here Dr. Amy Argus, who is a physician. She is a doctor, and she'll tell you the right things here. The director of Westchester Hospital Breast Imaging, the interim section chief of breast imaging at the University of Cincinnati Cancer Institute. We're talking about Breast Cancer Awareness Month coming up in October, but really, we need to talk about this more often than just 1 month out of the year. You can find out always more about anything with the University of Cincinnati or UC Health, Westchester Hospital, at uchealth.com/Westchester Hospital. Or if you want to find out more about the imaging area of the University of Cincinnati and Westchester Hospital, they have a really cool number, 513-585-TEST. 513-585-TEST, or that's, if you don't want to mess with that, 513-585-8378. I think I got that one right. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And, and by the way, if you'd like to join our conversation, that invitation's open here as well, 772-9658 or 877-772-9658, toll-free from anywhere in the country. And Dr. Amy Argus is here, and really it does establish, I think, in a lot of ways, the importance of Westchester Hospital and UC Health as a national leader here. So if you have a question, Dr. Argus will do her best to try to answer, at least give you the general information that we can give you here. Now, I think there are some people out there who feel that breast cancer is curable. Now, is curable, are we treating, or is it curable? I guess that's my big question.
Sometimes it is curable. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're pretty much considered cured once you're disease-free for 5 years. We consider that a cure. So, many breast cancers are cured today.
Now, but when we say cured, does that mean that it has been literally extracted from the body, or are there ways to minimize or shrink that tumor to the point where it's gone?
Well, yeah, for the most part, breast cancers are treated usually initially with a surgery. So we take it out.
Right.
We take the
exactly.
cancer out. But then there's still, and then we check the lymph nodes to see if there's been any spread. And there's still always a risk, though, that there are some little cells circulating somewhere that could pop up later. So oftentimes the treatment would also include some medication, like some kind of chemotherapy and hormone agents. The word cure, is it really cured, or not?
Right, that's why I almost wanted to put that in air quotes here, right?
Do we get rid of it many times and have it not come back many times? Yes. So if that's what we're considering a cure, yes. But do we have a medication that we can give and just make it, poof, go away and for everyone? No.
Right.
It's a lot of factors depending on how big the cancer is when you find it. Has it spread? There are different, some cancers are more aggressive than others. So we aren't able, unfortunately, to cure all of them in that way. But many we are, and, you know, through screening and finding things early and improvements in treatments, we do a pretty good job.
And to me, it seems to me the word cured would actually probably more importantly would be eventually to be able to say, can it be prevented?
Yes.
And I think that's where a lot of the research is going as well, including innovative treatments and for those people who are diagnosed with it. But also, how can we prevent it? How can we understand more to keep it or make it preventable?
Yes, definitely. There's a lot of research looking into vaccines. So, mm-hmm. you know, with cervical cancer, there's been a vaccine that it doesn't prevent the cancer, but it prevents an infection that was found to be actually the cause of many cervical cancers. So there's now a vaccine that will probably prevent most cervical cancers that our young women and men are getting. So there is there's research looking at that in breast cancer, definitely. I just, you know, it's just not quite there yet.
I just hope that every year when we sit down to talk about this around this time of the year, that maybe we know a little bit more by the next year, mm-hmm. and we know more about it, and eventually we'll unlock the way to prevent this from happening or to be able to treat it even more effectively. Let's talk for just a moment. I said something about how do men check for breast cancer? Mm-hmm. And you kind of raised your eyebrows, and you quoted me a figure that while breast cancer is not very prevalent in men, mm-hmm. it's on the rise. Is that correct?
Yeah, yes, it is. It's still very rare in men, but apparently there's been an increase in the incidence of like 400% over the 2000s, in the year 2000. So I don't think we're really sure why that's happening, but it is increasing in men, although still rare. As far as what men can do for screening, typically it's just an exam, I guess a clinical exam by their physician and self-exams. It's, you know, because men don't have a lot of breast tissue, it's a little bit easier for an exam, you know, for a mass to be felt.
Certainly.
So probably just men being aware that they should pay attention to that is very important, that they should, if they feel anything in their breast, that they should see their doctor to have it evaluated.
And I actually had a past colleague who passed away around 2000 from breast cancer, from the complications resulting from breast cancer and it spreading. And so, you know, I think a lot of guys hear the phrase breast cancer. What they think about is, okay, yeah, we see everybody wearing pink in the NFL games. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't need to worry about it. I'm more worried for my wife or my loved one or my daughter or my sister or whatever. But we don't need to worry about it because we're guys. We don't have to worry about breast cancer. But if there is a concern or if you want to know how to do that, you could talk to your own physician if you're a male and say, how do I do one of these self-exams, or have your doctor do that. Is that correct?
Yes, definitely.
They won't laugh at you, right?
No. They won't laugh at you.
Because I think a lot of most guys think it's like 99.999% repeating women. And even mm-hmm. though that is probably closer to that figure, it can happen in men. So
yes, it does. And unfortunately, it's often a little more advanced by the time a man realizes, mm-hmm. you know, because I think they're not checking for it.
Right.
Not,
right.
Not aware
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, because they have that mindset, yeah. I think.
And there are the genetic mutations that we know of. You know, men can be carriers of the genetic mutation. So if it runs in a family, or if there's a known mutation in a family, you know, then men can carry that and they can get breast cancer. They can also pass off the genetic mutation to their daughters and sons and not be affected by cancer themselves. But if there are men who do carry a gene, genetic mutation, then they are actually screened with imaging.
Very good. Very good thing to be aware of, though, because I think, again, most guys think it's just one gender in this case. Mm-hmm. If breast cancer is detected, you already mentioned a few of the different options, but what is the next step if you detect some form of breast cancer in one of these tests? We'll get to the different tests in a moment, but for those people who may find themselves discovering that there is something there. Mm-hmm. What happens next?
Well, for the most part, the first step in So if you found something on an exam or an imaging test, a lump or a mass or something like that, then the first thing to do is to find out what it is, usually with a biopsy. There are a lot of non-cancerous things that cause lumps and calcifications and things in the breast. So we can't always tell just by looking at it or feeling it. So we usually need to do what we call a biopsy. Most of the time we can do those biopsies just with a little local anesthetic, kind of numbing medicine, and a needle, and take out a few pieces of the lesion. We can use our imaging to guide that, or if it's a mass that can be felt, we can use, feel it and just get a little piece of it and find out what it is. And then once we know what it is, if it's small enough to be taken out with what we call a lumpectomy, mm-hmm. rather than taking the entire breast, which is what's called a mastectomy, those are usually the first two options. Are the first thing is typically surgery in cancers that haven't spread yet, if you will. So a lumpectomy just takes out that little area, takes out the tumor, and then we follow that with radiation to the breast. And we do that because that decreases the risk of having it recur in the breast. Now, if the tumor is large and taking up a lot of the area of the breast, then sometimes we need to remove the whole breast. And it's always, an option for women as well. Some women opt to just have a mastectomy so that they don't have to worry about it anymore.
Are women, and to me, I think anytime we lose any portion of our body, be it a mastectomy in this case that we're talking about, there is a feeling of some loss of identity or loss of the body, and especially in this sexual society that we have where, mm-hmm. There's such an emphasis on certain attributes of a woman, including the breasts. Mm-hmm. Is that a very difficult thing for some women to come to deal with? And what kind of support or what kind of advice is there for women who are dealing with this issue? I know I'm asking you something a little deeper than we were maybe planning to talk about, but I think that's a very real sticking point, I think, for some women.
Yeah. And I think it's just a very personal decision, mm-hmm. and different women take it differently and think differently about it. And it's not really – I'm usually on the upfront part finding the cancers, but I am, I do meet a lot of these women and somewhat involved in the conversation. So it's, I don't know. Some women are very against losing that part of their body, and I can't really blame them because you do. It's a body preservation issue. You sure, want to keep your sure. body. And then I'll meet other women, and they don't want to worry about having it come back, and they prefer to just go ahead and maybe even have a bilateral mastectomy. And it's a personal decision. And what we do at UC Health is we always recommend for women to speak with our plastic surgeons initially and see what their options are for reconstruction. There are beautiful reconstruction techniques mm-hmm. these days with implants or abdominal flaps, or they take actually your own tissue, kind of the fat from your abdomen and recreate a breast. So there are very good options. It's not necessarily as kind of mutilating of a thing
right,
as
right.
it was.
I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Actually very...
Basically, there are more aesthetic options than
yes.
probably have ever been there before. And I think that may help some women who might otherwise go, I really don't want to do this because somehow they think that it affects their identity in one way, shape, or form. But this is life preservation at this point. Mm-hmm. You don't want that tumor or whatever to continue to grow or to, as you said, metastasize to another part of the body. It, to me, and being a guy, and I'm just asking from the other side of the table, to me that would be, and I've heard of women who have had this issue, to me I would go, hey, I want to live. Mm-hmm. I don't want this. But there are some real issues that I think some people have to work through mm-hmm. in this. Very fascinating. I want to thank Dr. Amy Argus. She is here with us. We're going to take a quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, it is 513-772-9658. Or our toll-free number is 877-772-9658. Dr. Amy Argus is the director of Westchester Hospital Breast Imaging, interim section chief of breast imaging at the University of Cincinnati Cancer Institute. We're talking about Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and you can find out more about what Amy does, Dr. Argus does, and all the physicians at uchealth.com/Westchester Hospital. Also, you can find out more about the Imaging Center at 513-585-TEST. That's 513-585-8378. We'll be back in just a moment with more of HealthScope here on WMKV, WLHS, and streaming around the world at WMKVFM.org. The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program or of WMKV Radio, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or its staff and management. Discussion of specific points and general topics on this program are not meant to be taken as specific professional advice. We are back on HealthScope here on WMKV and WLHS. Our very special guest today joining us back here in our studios, Dr. Amy Argus, the Director of Westchester Hospital Breast Imaging, the Interim Section Chief of Breast Imaging at the UC Cancer Institute. We're talking about Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which is actually happening in the month of October. I promise you, no matter when you hear this program, it's definitely something you want to be aware of and you want to talk about. And we'll talk more about how to find out more about the imaging, the breast imaging section of UC Health and the Westchester Hospital coming up here. Dr. Argus, thank you for letting me kind of put you on the spot a little bit there about the whole body image issue. What if I have no family history? Does that mean I can just kind of blithely go along and not be worried about breast cancer?
Well, no, actually, you know, some women who do have a family history are at an increased risk over other women to get breast cancer, but most breast cancers actually occur in women with no family history.
Really?
So, yes,
okay.
Actually, 1 in 8 women are diagnosed with breast cancer today, and, you know, many of them have no family history, so we that's why we screen all women.
And once again, yeah, I think a lot of people, that is maybe one of the myths out there. Because we hear about that, especially it's very good to be more vigilant if you have a family history. But I think some people figure, oh, all bets are off. I don't need to worry about this. So even if I don't have a family history, it is something I should still have screened on a regular basis. And just to reiterate from the first half of the show, there is the age 40 is a good time to start if you have no family history. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
For the first screenings. And and then the 10-year rule for those people who do have a family history, I call it the 10-year rule now. But for instance, if your mother had breast cancer that onset at age 45, you go minus 10 years, so you should have it at 35 instead of waiting until 40.
Yes, correct.
Something like that. Okay.
Your mother or sister
or
father.
Yes.
First-degree relative.
Exactly.
Relative, yes.
Yeah, and again, thinking father, even on something like that. Let's describe, what does a breast cancer patient look like? What you know, gender, age, race, maybe socioeconomic or regional background. What does a breast cancer patient look like?
Just a woman. There are no, you know, really no boundaries. I mean, age, it's cancer's much less common in younger women, and the incidence begins going up at age 40, and that's why the screening begins at age 40. But it also happens in younger women, just not as common. But there are no socioeconomic or race boundaries. It just being a woman is the biggest risk. Of course, it happens in men, as we said, but much less common.
Sure. And this is, though, something that, again, everybody needs to be a little bit concerned about. I mean, we're not here to scare people. That's not what these programs are about. But if we can raise awareness and maybe even create the conversation. In fact, one of the questions I was going to ask later, but I think it's very important because of the fact that it's not necessarily tied to family history. It's not necessarily tied to a specific gender. Well, it is more women, of course, but age, race, or anything like that. To me, and maybe you could comment on this as somebody who deals with breast imaging on a regular basis, it's very important for the family to have this communication open so that maybe the mom talks with the daughter about it, or vice versa. How many times do our kids bring home something that need to make the parents a little more aware of something? Maybe the daughter hears about this and says, "Mom, have you ever had a breast cancer screening?" It's really good to keep this line of communication open, is it not?
Yes, definitely. And I do see women who come in for their first mammogram when they're 60, maybe because their daughter had a cancer or an abnormal finding or something, you know, that they realize that they should be screening as well. But the line of communication in the family is important so that everyone can realize their risk. You know, is it running in the family, and what should we do to protect ourselves?
And once again, starting at that age 40, is this an annual mammogram that they should have?
Yes, we do recommend annual mammograms and clinical breast exams by the physician. Those go hand in hand, both of those every year for all women over age 40. And then, you know, the question of when to stop comes up sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's really as long as a woman is healthy and willing to act on an abnormality if found, then they should continue screening as long as they, you know, feel healthy.
Yeah, I have a question. It seems to me like it's kind of a misery loves company when it comes to the mammogram. I only know this from talking to my wife and my daughter. I understand it's very painful. I'm a guy. I don't know on something like this. It's very painful. But I could almost see kind of going in with a buddy system. Maybe if you've got a sister or a friend, you both go in together and just be you can complain mm-hmm. about the mammogram or the screening together, just go in and have it done at the same time. Or maybe even a daughter who's just turning 40, making sure that mom goes with her to have that screening done if she has never had it done or hasn't had it done in over a year. So mm-hmm. It seems to me that at least there's a strength in numbers maybe on this. Mm-hmm. From my wife and daughter, I have to ask the personal question, can mammograms ever be less painful?
That's a good question. That's not the first time I've heard that one. So the pain, by painful, you mean the compression, right?
Yes,
the squish.
Yes.
With
I understand.
With the
and yeah. again, not yeah. having been there myself, but I understand it is really uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's brief, though.
Yes.
Let's say that. It's only for a few seconds. But the compression, the squishing is very important because it does two things. It decreases the depth of the tissue, the width of the tissue for the mammogram is basically an x-ray. It's a very low dose x-ray, but it allows us to use less x-ray, if you will, less radiation on the thinner breast tissue. So we do it for that. It also helps us see through the tissue better. And it decreases motion. So any little bit of motion of the tissue can blur out abnormalities. So that's why we need that compression. And we have not been able to get rid of that. Even
right,
with
right,
our,
right.
We may talk about in a little bit if you want the 3D mammograms, this new technology.
But is that the tomo?
The tomosynthesis.
Right, right.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
It still
that,
needs the squish.
Well, there goes that. At least I was trying to play off that angle to see if we could get by with not having to squish for the women out there. But again, it is something very important. Is it ever of the case where men would have enough breast tissue to have a mammogram?
Yes, we do. And in fact, if a male shows up with finds a breast lump, that is typically the first test to evaluate it. Because as we said, men can get breast cancer, mm-hmm. but they can also get non-cancerous lumps in their breasts. There's some things that go on pretty commonly. One's called gynecomastia. It's where the glandular tissue in the male breast starts to grow. It's often a side effect of a medication or something like that. But the mammogram can typically differentiate the two. So we do mammograms on men if they have a lump. And then in men who are genetic mutation carriers, if they carry one of these breast cancer genes, we do mammograms on them as well for screening.
And here's one of the things that I want to make sure, because I asked kind of lightly about making the mammogram less uncomfortable or more comfortable. Please don't be afraid of going for your first mammogram. And that's, we don't want to scare people off here, because it really is, it could be a life-saving test. I mean, it's really something very important. So it is, as you said, but how long really are you generally uncomfortable in a mammogram?
Oh, it's less than a
seconds?
Minute.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just seconds. Yeah, maybe 10, 20 seconds.
And isn't that worth it for a life? Yes,
yeah,
for a
yeah.
lifetime.
And a couple of things that you can do to decrease the discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
So women who are premenopausal, you don't want to come when your breasts are tender or swollen. You want to maybe schedule it for like the week after your menstrual cycle. Mm-hmm. when you're typically less tender. You can just take a couple Advil an hour before you come in. That can help with the discomfort. And it's always, you know, a woman's always has the prerogative to just tell the technologist that it's too tight. I mean, they don't want to hurt you. They're just trying to do the best they can without, you know, get the best test. But definitely, you need to tell them they need to stop, and they will. That's not the point. And it is
understood,
quick.
Right?
It's just a few seconds, and then it releases right away automatically.
Yes. Yeah. We talked about mammogram, and that's just one of the diagnostic tools. And I think that kind of leads us into this new three-dimensional technology, or fairly new. Tell us a little bit about some of the different diagnostic tools that are used.
Yeah, there are a lot of new technologies that are being used to screen for breast cancer and image the breast. The one I'm most excited about is called tomosynthesis, or they call it 3D mammography. It is basically just a different way to do a mammogram, if you will. So the standard mammogram that we've all had is a two-dimensional image. It's a flat picture of a three-dimensional structure of the breast. So it takes a very low-dose X-ray through the breast and shows it as a flat image. And so the 3D mammogram, or tomosynthesis, basically takes multiple little X-rays through the breast. It arcs, moves across the breast, taking multiple images. And then we can look through the breast, sort of like the pages of a book, kind of page by page. And it, but the total X-ray dose is equal to that for one two-dimensional picture. So it's very low dose total.
And does it give you a more accurate image?
Yeah. You know, what it does is it just improves on mammography. So it helps you find abnormalities. Because on the two-dimensional mammogram, sometimes masses, you know, cancers potentially, are hidden in the breast tissue. So the breast is made up of fatty tissue and glandular or parenchymal fibroglandular tissue, we call it. And so the fatty tissue in the breast shows up dark on the mammogram, but that fibroglandular tissue shows up white. Now masses, tumors potentially, are white. So if there's a lot of white fibroglandular tissue, it will hide the mass. We call that breast density. So the more white fibroglandular tissue on the mammogram, the more dense the breast on the mammogram, and that can limit how good the mammogram can be at finding a tumor. And so tomosynthesis or 3D mammography helps with that because it gets rid of some of that overlapping tissue. It lets you page through, and you can see more abnormalities that way. It also improves upon what we call the false positives or callbacks. So if women may have this sound familiar, that you go for your screening mammogram and then you get a call that we need you to come back for more pictures. So we call that a callback. And much of the time, a few more pictures are taken with an ultrasound or more mammogram images, and it's found to be fine. And that's because sometimes on that two-dimensional flat picture, the structures in the breast, the fibroglandular structures, kind of overlap and make it look like there's a focal mass there when there's not. They're actually just kind of summated on one another. And so the 3D mammogram helps eliminate some of that.
So a couple of things. If a woman has been in for mammogram before and knows that she's been told or knows that she has particularly dense breast tissue, should she just request then a tomosynthesis or the three-dimensional? Mm-hmm. And also, if you are called back, why don't they just send you to tomo first or next? Or, you know, is there a reason why those two issues might come up?
Well, first of all, for the screening for the woman with dense breast, so if you have dense breast tissue, the 3D mammogram is probably better than the regular mammogram, than the two-dimensional mammogram. But there have been quite a few studies that have shown an improved cancer detection rate, meaning we find more cancers with a 3D in addition to the 2D mammogram, the regular mammogram. And, you know, the thing is, it's not really the standard of care yet, the 3D mammogram. It's not offered everywhere yet. I think one day it probably will replace regular mammography. But for now, I think the best a woman could do would be to try to see if it's offered, you know, where it's offered, and maybe seek out that site. Some sites, I believe, are still charging extra for it because there's not any extra payment from insurance companies. They're not covering it. At UC Health, we are not charging any additional charge. So we are offering that to any woman who wants it for screening at no additional charge. And then as far as being called back, we do use it. We have it at UC Health, the technology, both at Westchester Hospital and at the Barrett Center down at UCMC, the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. So we do find it quite helpful in working up abnormalities, and when we're using it quite a bit, and I'm finding it's making my job easier.
And that's, I was going to say that one of the issues might be just the fact of availability, because there are people listening to us all over the country right now, and maybe in their particular area, this tomosynthesis procedure is not available where they are yet.
Yeah, it's very new technology, and it's just becoming adopted, you know, across the country. We just started offering it in January, so just this year. So it's very new, and it's coming. And you know, it's an expense for healthcare systems to take on. And I think it will probably, I think hopefully become the standard of care one day. But
it sounds like it's more accurate.
It is, yes. So it's very new.
If you're just joining us, Dr. Amy Argus is here with us, and we are so thrilled to have her on here from UC Health. She's a returning guest. She is the director of Westchester Hospital Breast Imaging and the interim section chief of breast imaging at the University of Cincinnati Cancer Institute. And you can find out more about her work, about the work of UC Health at uchealth.com/Westchester Hospital. Or if you want to find out more about imaging, always, you can reach them at 513-585-TEST, T-E-S-T, or 8378. We'll give that information one more time at the end of the program here. For somebody who's getting ready, maybe for their very first exam or their first mammogram, any of this, what kind of preparations? You mentioned maybe taking a mild pain reliever or something like that. Does it help to come into something like this, or would the woman already or the patient already have spoken with their doctor about family history, other things? Is there something that they should be bringing with them or preparations that they should make coming in?
Yes. Well, a few things. So the clinical breast exam by the doctor, that it's typically best to have that first, you know, to make sure the doctor doesn't feel a lump or something before you come for your mammogram. And if you've ever had a mammogram before, then it is important to have those prior images there to compare. You know, it will decrease the false positives and being asked to come back for more images if we have prior mammograms to compare
it's
to.
Like a baseline.
Yeah, yeah. Right? So if you've ever had one elsewhere and you're going to a new center, then you'd want to make sure that we have those, you know, that new center has those images to compare. Another thing that's important that we always have our schedulers ask our patients before they schedule their mammogram is, you know, do they have a lump? Do they have a symptom in their breast that they're concerned about? Do they feel a lump in their breast? Is there any discharge, nipple discharge, or anything abnormal? Because if there's any concern that there may be a problem going on, then that woman would need a diagnostic mammogram rather than a screening mammogram, which are two totally different things. So a screening mammogram, it's for a woman with no symptoms, no problems, just looking to find cancer early if we can, versus a diagnostic mammogram where the doctor, the radiologist, me, actually monitors the exam, looks at the images real time as they're performed, maybe need an ultrasound or try to work up a problem. So that's the biggest thing, is determining whether we need a diagnostic or a screening mammogram. And you don't need an order from a doctor for a screening mammogram. You can just show up.
I do want to also emphasize something that we were just talking about during the actual break at the midway point of the show. And I brought up the whole point about support groups and things like that. If someone is diagnosed with any kind of cancer, but especially as we're talking today about breast cancer, and Deb was telling us that there are indeed support groups available, and or at least information about support groups and support groups available through UC Westchester. And you can find out more at their website, uchealth.com/Westchester Hospital, or by calling 513-298-DOCS. They could find it out there, wouldn't they, Deb? Very important, because I think just as we talk about things like gerontology and caregivers dealing with gerontological problems, the caregiver sometimes doesn't understand that other people have been through this before. They feel like they're helping that senior person in their life get through, and they feel like they have to reinvent the wheel every time. And while I'm sure every breast cancer condition is slightly different and each one is unique, there are some baseline things that a support group can lend toward dealing with that initial trauma of finding out that you have breast cancer and not knowing how pervasive it is or what you're doing at that point. So support groups are very helpful. And also, if I could just get you, Dr. Argus, to, if you could say something to women out there who maybe are past that 40 baseline or that 40 age time period, or they have been ignoring the 10 rule, which is if somebody in your family, immediate family, first degree relative, thank you. If they just had this maybe at, you know, as I said, at 45, you should be at 35 then.
Yes.
What would you say to somebody who's out there kind of in denial about this and said, I don't need to worry about this?
Well, just the fact that the biggest risk factor for breast cancer is being a woman. And, you know, we do recommend annual screening still with mammography and breast exams, even though there has been some, you know, conflicting data. There was a government task force that came up with a recommendation of screening every 2 years after age 50, but that has been pretty much refuted. I believe the government is going to do a new, I have heard they're going to do a new study, but basically all of the American Medical Association, all of the main medical associations still stand by the recommendation for annual screening mammography starting at age 40. And that's because there are so many studies showing that less women die when they have screening. Less women die from their breast cancer. So mortality from breast cancer has been shown in many studies to be decreased by 30% to 50% among screening populations, women having screening. And I will tell you one study that was published recently in Harvard that really hit home to me was that they looked at the women. They were treated at Harvard affiliated hospitals, so good care, right? And this is recent. And they looked at their breast cancer patients, and 70% of the patients who died from their breast cancer came from the small percentage, 30% of their patients who were not being screened. So I just think that it's just an easy thing to do, and it could save your life.
Definitely. In the final moments here, Dr. Argus, thank you. Dr. Argus has let me put her on the spot with a couple of questions that we really hadn't planned here. But one of my goals, I would hope, would be that mothers and daughters and grandmothers and daughters, nieces, whatever, are all talking about this, not just during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but during any time of the year, especially if there is a family history. But as you pointed out, a lot of women with no family history, boom, it shows up. So please talk about it with your family. Make it a point of conversation, not a point of obsession, but a point of conversation to be aware of it and to know some of the rules on the types of screenings and when to go. Research. Where would you like to see us in the next year or two? And what kind of research do you see coming down the pike that's going to help us understand breast cancer better?
Well, there's a lot of research going on in breast cancer. On my side, on the imaging side, some research we're doing is we're looking at it's being looked at using – we do use breast MRI. Let me say that. We use breast MRI to screen for breast cancer in women at an elevated risk. We didn't really get to discuss that much, but it is something for women who are at a high risk with a strong family history or other reasons that you know they can discuss that with their doctor. But we are looking at ways to shorten the MRI test and try to make it less expensive so that it could be available for more women.
But it is an option.
Yeah, yes. It is. It's an expensive option. So radiologists are making an effort to try to make that more available. It's actually the best test to find breast cancer, but it's just very expensive. So it's not for not for average risk women. And then, you know, some other research as far as treating breast cancer, immunotherapy is a big thing right now where we actually have some research going on at the University of Cincinnati Cancer Institute working on immunotherapy. So they're basically finding ways to use your body's immune system to fight cancers. And we have research going on right now at UC looking at ways to stop drug resistance. So one problem we have with treating cancers is that the cancers become resistant to the medicines, to the chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of research going on trying to figure out how to use immune cells to make our medicines work better on the cancers as well.
And in my simplistic mind, if we could do it for one cancer, maybe that would unlock some of the other doors to doing it for all cancers, which would be amazing.
There's been some promise shown with melanoma, actually, I think was the groundbreaking one with immune therapy. And so now it's breaking into other cancers.
Very good. Yeah. Dr. Amy Argus, thank you for being here with us today.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Delightful conversation and very important topic here. Amy Argus, Dr. Amy Argus is the director of Westchester Hospital Breast Imaging, the interim section chief for breast imaging at the University of Cincinnati Cancer Institute. You can find out more, especially about one of our good friends here, UC Health and Westchester Hospital, uchealth.com/Westchester Hospital, or you can find out more about breast imaging and screenings, 513-585-8378. Thank you to Dr. Amy Argus. Thanks to Deb Teitelbaum. And thank you for listening to WMKV and WLHS for HealthScope. You've been listening to WMKV HealthScope. Join us again next Monday at 1 p.m. for another edition of WMKV HealthScope on 89.3 WMKV Reading, Ohio.